Hi, and welcome to Only the Avatar.
An Avatar the Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm Veda.
And I'm Christina, and you're listening to The Day of Black Sun, Part 2, The Eclipse.
Sorry for leaving everyone on a cliffhanger right in the middle of a two-parter episode.
I know. But we were really busy, though. Lots of fun stuff happening in our universes.
So. Lots of things happening, but happy to be back. How has your week been?
It's been crazy. So me and my partner, we're actually are buying a house. So it's been really stressful, but good, really exciting overall. But there's so much stuff. It's hard being an adult. Like,
it's so annoying. It's so hard. I want to be back to being a kid. But at the same time, when you're, it's like annoying because when you're a kid, you don't have any money or freedom. And then when you're old, you might have money and you obviously have more freedom, but you have all these responsibilities to do. And we don't even have kids. And I feel like we have tons of responsibilities.
We had inspection yesterday for the house and they were talking about the things you need to keep maintain and things you need to fix. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how am I going to take care of this house? Like, and then have to maybe have a kid one day. Like, isn't that crazy? Like, I can't take care of all the stuff. You barely take care of a plant.
It's like, you know how like people always make fun of millennials of like, oh, adulting, like, and how like millennials are slow to, even though I don't actually like generational discourse like that, like millennials are old now. Like, people are 40, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, why are you guys still talking about millennials here?
But it's like, we live in their head rent free.
Yeah, I know we do. But I feel like we as a generation had a rough go of it. And even the Gen X before us, it's like anything that was like promised to you just kind of got messed up, right? Like we thought you'd go to college, you'll graduate, you'll have a great job. But, or, you know, two economic crises from when we graduated high school and when we graduated college. Housing prices are going up and up. It's everything is so expensive and like wages are mostly the same. So how are you supposed to afford things?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think especially coming from like an immigrant family, you're like, oh, I need to like be more successful than my family because like they work so hard so I could be more successful than them. And that's not going to happen for most of us because it was so much easier for them to like buy a house for like $200,000 compared to now.
You know
I mean?
Yeah, like my parents, I think the house like was like $150,000 when they bought it. You know what I mean? And now it's like
crazy.
Crazy. And it's just, it's sad because like, you know, your parents come here and like they're investing in this new life. But like you technically as a first generation child, are we the investment? You know what I mean? So it like puts a ton of pressure to like achieve certain things and achieve certain goals, things like that. And it's just an awkward place because it's like, oh, you guys came all the way here. We better do a good job.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure, but our parents' generation were able to have it was, I feel like it was easier, and they kind of ruined it for us. Like, don't say millennials are have bad work ethics. You're the ones that raised us.
Sometimes we realize that the job is dumb, so that's
why. It's like why you know what I mean. We're over capitalism.
We are.
I might have mentioned this in a past episode, but one of my favorite TikToks is this girl going, I have 1 year left, 1 year of capitalism left in me. 1 year left. It's so funny.
Me too. How do you calculate that standard of how much you have left? I think I have a year left.
I want to see like a calculator online that I could fill out and be like, you have 20 years left or you have 3 years left of capitalism left.
She's burned out.
And I think also, like, we just don't have the resources. We don't have like communities to help us and we don't have a stability enough for us to be like, okay, like capitalism is worth it because we have X, Y, and Z. We don't have any of that stuff. So it's kind of stupid.
I know. Like, and it's like, I think for me, I've been really thinking about like, what are other ways to live? Like, we're because within capitalism, there's always one, you know, way, like a nuclear family, two people working, like, you know, more isolated houses because we're in the suburbs. It's just, what's another way to live? And I feel like I don't even have that many examples of it, right? Like, we don't really see it. And I think I know other people are also like, have been curious about it, trying, you know, is it like this kind of like remote traveling type of life? Is it more of like, you know,
RV life or something? I mean,
that sounds so bad to me, honestly.
I need my space.
So it's like, so it's just, I don't know. I've been kind of thinking of like, what are other ways to live? Like, how come we don't have these examples around?
Yeah, that's true.
You know? So, yeah. And interestingly, over July 4th, I read this book called How Much of These Hills is Gold? And it was talking about, it's like an immigrant story, but around the gold rush. And like, it talks about the Chinese experience of building out the Western part of our country. It was really depressing, honestly. Like, if you want to just kind of like cry for a little while, it is a good book to do that with. But the first 100 pages were really rough. But then once I crossed over to it and I got into the story, I was like, this is so good. Mm-hmm. But then I actually got into a little bit of a depression hole after reading it, which, like, not trigger warning, I mean, like, actual warning. Like, I was really in a bad mood after reading it. And then I read the new Sally Rooney excerpt that was in The New Yorker, and she wrote Normal People and Conversations with Friends and the Hulu show Normal People, if you saw that. But something about – everyone's like, oh, I love Sally Rooney. I love her too. I think she's a great writer. She's mm-hmm. fun to read. But something about her writing affects me in a way that I get into a depression hole. Both times I read her, and they're not like, everyone's like, oh, they're not even sad, but they just hit me in some point that like, I actually get so sad for a week. I read that story in The New Yorker and I was sad for a week. And everyone's like, are you okay?
Maybe you should just stop reading. I don't know. I'm in a place where I'm only going to do things that make me happy.
But I love the stories. They're so good. They're so good. But they just like hit me in a certain way that I get into a mood.
That's so funny. I read, what did I read? A Court of Throne and Roses. That's mm-hmm. what I read. It's by Sarah J. Maas, and she's just like a big fantasy writer and things like that. And I thought it was okay, the book. That was just mm-hmm. like the latest book I read. I really liked the beginning, and then there was like a point in the middle where I was like, okay, let's speed this up. What's going on? There was a lot of like, we cannot tell you about this mysterious thing happening in our lands. I'm like, bitch, tell me. I'm bored. I need more information. You know,
so funny. Also, you know, like book talk on TikTok and stuff. Why are they? I feel like everyone recommends the same books. Like, I know, let's like, get some diversity things. In here.
Yes,
like, every single one is like The Seven Wives of Victor Hugo.
Okay, no, but that book was amazing.
The is Seven it? Wives. I need to read it.
The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Okay, that's what it's called. I'm like, I see this recommended on every single TikTok.
But the thing is, it's so good. Like, when something's good, everyone's going to recommend it. You know what I mean? It's so good.
More people recommend it, the less I'm going to read.
No, but it's so good. I think it's going to be a TV show, too. Or
I wouldn't be surprised.
A movie or something. But
Oh, I watched the new episode of the Gossip Girl reboot.
Oh, how was it?
Horrible. It is so bad. I was like, the writing is horrendous. And I love the Gossip Girl book series. Mm-hmm. I love the original show. The writing was so bad. And the conceit of the show, like the concept of why Gossip Girl comes back and why they're watching these people. It's actually so weird and problematic. And the writing is so bad. Like, they tried to fit together all the plot points, like everyone's backstory and exposition mm-hmm. in like a sentence. So, you know, a girl comes to see her dad at breakfast and she's like, oh, I'm so glad we decided to transfer schools and I got this scholarship and my mom is dead.
It's like when you have to write something, it's like in less than 100 words, describe X. And that's what it was. They're like, this episode needs to only be 30 minutes. Let's pack everything in.
I was like, this is so awkward. So it was pretty bad. But everyone's so hot. Like they're just so attractive. Like, how are people not good looking?
Plastic surgery, Photoshop, et cetera,
I don't know. I think they're just good looking. I was just like, wow, everyone in the show is so beautiful. Like, I mean, it's good. The cast is diverse, but the whole concept is so bad. Like, they.
But it wasn't the whole concept of Gossip Girls. Like, they're elite, privileged people that are white and stupid. And now it's not. They're like, we're not going to talk about how privileged they are in Gossip Girl. Like, what's the point of the show then?
It's so bizarre. I don't want to give a spoiler, but if you do watch it, your jaw is going to drop when you see why Gossip Girl comes back. It is mm-hmm. the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
I'll probably just look it up because I'm not going to watch it. Let's be real.
Oh, really?
I'll just look it up.
I'll tell you after. I don't want to spoil it for people who are listening. But should we jump into the episode?
Let's do it. So the eclipse has started and the gang is only a few minutes away from getting to the Fire Lord. But, you know, obviously Aang finds out that no one at the palace, no one is there. Everyone is in hiding, or the Fire Lord is hiding. However, we come to learn that there is an actual secret bunker under a volcano where we think the Fire Lord is hiding. But Azula has some other plans. When they enter into the bunker, it's Azula, and she distracts Aang and Sokka and Toph, and they are on a chase instead of actually finding the Fire Lord. So Aang isn't able to actually face the Fire Lord.
But someone else is actually able to face the Fire Lord, and it's Zuko. So Zuko uses the eclipse to tell his father his truth and the truth in general. He takes a stand. Mm-hmm. He says that his destiny is to work with the Avatar and help bring an era of peace to the world. Ozai is so cruel to him, and it's like, why don't you kill me then? Like, you're so, and like, why are you using this eclipse when you know I can't bend to tell me this, and I'm going to kill you after the eclipse? But Zuko is like, it's not my destiny to kill you, so I'm not going to do it, but mm-hmm. I'm going to just tell you what I want to do. They fight. Zuko actually is able to move the fire away from him, and he disappears.
He uses lightning bending. Thank you, Uncle Iroh.
And, you know, Zuko also is like, wow, I'm going with my uncle, and you can hear how angry Ozai is about this. Like, it was just a great scene.
It really was. And so with that, the end of the eclipse is coming, and it's basically the end of the battle. And unfortunately, Aang did not seek out his goal of defeating the Fire Lord. So the gang's army is surrounded by hot air balloons by the Fire Nation, and the submarines are destroyed. They're kind of trapped where they are in the Fire Nation, and the adults in the army decide to actually surrender. So they can fight another day. And the younger members of the army and the gang retreat safely with Appa. And without the Avatar, there is no hope. So it makes sense that, like, the gang, Aang, Sokka, and Katara are able to leave on Appa so they could be safe until everyone is ready to attack again, to fight another battle on another day.
So, yeah, they go to the Western Air Temple, and Zuko is following them close behind. So this episode was so bleak in a way, but
I didn't want to watch it. I was kind of like, especially, oh, I guess I have to do it.
I know, especially compared to the last one where you're like at the high of battle and mm-hmm. you're like, oh, this is all going to work out. The plan is going to happen. And then just seeing them face difficulty and failure after failure. But as in a structural level, the episode is really great because it starts, we see everyone, like, it's almost like everyone comes together, everyone unravels, and then now we're back at square one where the gang is all flying around trying to start all over again, and Zuko's trailing them.
It's basically like your Sally Rooney books, right? Like, great episode, but I'm depressed now. Because, the character development of Zuko, like, honestly, this is like Zuko in this episode. This is my favorite scene of Zuko's when he's talking to his father. So much character development. So much has changed. And I hate Azula more now than ever, which means her character is right on point for what she's supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So totally agree that I'm just like, oh, this is a great episode, but I don't want to watch it because I don't want to be annoyed afterwards. Yeah.
What did you think of Zuko? Like, first of all, I mean, it's amazing that mirroring of Zuko and Aang that comes back, right? Like, mm-hmm. Aang is trying to find the Fire Lord and talk to him and defeat him, and Zuko is the one who's there facing him. But what did you think of Ozai's reaction to, like, his son's confession?
Honestly, I was surprised. Like, the Fire Lord has been presented as so mean and so cruel. And what I thought was very interesting was, you know, the Fire Lord is standing up saying, Zuko, you're like a disobedient child. I will mm-hmm. hit you. I will, you know, destroy you, and I will kill you, basically. But at one point, it's especially during like the eclipse where he can't really fight back. Zuko takes out his swords and he's like, you're going to sit down and you're going to listen to me. And he actually sits down and listens. That was what I found very surprising. But overall, I thought it was really interesting because, like, Lord Ozai during that time period, like, this is like the first time we're really actually hearing him speak, I think.
Yes.
And when I was watching this, when I was like listening to him, I'm like, this is obvious where Azula gets every single character trait. It's from her father, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're both conniving, they're both deceiving, they're both horrible people. So it makes sense that he is the way he is. And I'm just so proud of Zuko for one, like, being able to say to him, you're going to sit down, you're going to listen to me. And he's not scared of his father anymore. And him just coming to that realization, and he's like, wow, I thought I wanted your respect, but you don't deserve my respect because you're a horrible human being. I know my destiny now. He's so mm-hmm. confident in what his destiny is, as to being like, my job is to help the Avatar. Even at the end, when he could probably take out Fire Lord, he's like, this is not my destiny. It's it's the Avatar's destiny. I thought that was so powerful.
Me too.
I loved hearing it. I love that he just walks away at that
point. I also liked one thing that I thought was really interesting between like the similarities between Ozai and Azula is how they both use like emotional manipulation mm-hmm. in the bunker. Like Ozai brings up Zuko's mom and he's like, do you know what happened to your mom? And that was interesting. Like, you know what your mom did, you know, she helped, like she spared your life, but then he kind of insinuates that Zuko's mom is still alive and he's trying to like hit that emotional core to weaken Zuko's resolve, weaken his, you know, his like emotional thing so he can beat him. And then Azula does the same thing because she, like the gang is like, this is a trap, we need to leave. But then she mentions Suki to Sokka and Sokka just suddenly is like, his whole strength is gone, and because she hit a nerve, right? She hit a nerve, and they both understand how to weaken the opponent by bringing up their person that they love. Because I don't think Ozai and Azula love anyone, so they see that as a weakness.
They find love to be a weakness, and the one thing, obviously, the gang Sokka wasn't able to handle that because they want to find their friends, but. Zuko was able to overcome it. He's like, tell me more. But then he was like, you know what? I need to get out of here. I need to find Uncle Iroh. I need to find the Avatar as well. He was able to overcome it because he's been in that environment. You know what I mean? He knows that this is their tactics. And it's really like one of my favorite lines in this entire scene with Zuko and his father was when he was like, we were taught in school that we were the best nation and we want to share our greatness with everyone. What a lie. Like, everyone hates us. Like, we're a terror. We need to be taken down and we need to bring peace. I'm like, oh, it's the United States.
Right. Like, oh my like, God, oh, that line, it just, it hits.
It's different when you're older after everything we've been through.
It really does when he says that, like, I want to end the era of fear and like, Zuko's woke now. Like, he saw past all of the amount of propaganda that's happening. Yeah. You know, Zuko, I feel like his bad attitude a lot of the time is because he was so confused. Like, he's had so many mixed messages. He doesn't know what he thinks. And, like, this is the first time he actually can see beyond everyone's bullshit, basically. And
I know. And yeah, when he calls out his father being like, you literally challenged me at 13 to an Agni Kai. That's abuse. Like, that's, and he's like, that's like, no, I was trying to teach you a lesson. Like, no, you're psychotic. That's not the accurate way to discipline a child, is by abuse. You know what I mean? And he's like, well, my dad's fucked up.
That is a crazy realization, especially with someone who was able to understand himself. Like, the reason that he was chasing after the Avatar was not because he wanted to help the Fire Nation. It was because he wanted his dad to love him. And then now he's like, you don't know anything. Like, why should I try to gain your respect? And I don't know. It's just a really hard, like, it's really hard to see sometimes what your childhood truly is, right? Because it's like, and see your parents for who they are, see them as people outside of like, oh, they're my parents and I love them. Like, that's a really hard choice. Like, he's walking away from his entire family. That shit's hard.
It is, but he needed to do it. And at least he has Uncle Iroh, right?
I know.
And I really just loved everything about the Zuko Fire Lord scene because I was so frustrated watching Azula chase basically the, or like Azula biding her time so that the eclipse will go away and like being so mean to the gang. Like, I hated that, but I loved watching Zuko basically own his father. And when the firebending comes back, when the Fire Lord actually tries to hit Zuko with like lightning, you know, Zuko, everything he's learned, everything about he's learned from Uncle Iroh, especially like the lightning bending, is like showcased in that scene where he's able to then redirect the lightning and hit his father. And he actually hurts his father. Like, who has done that in the Fire Nation? No one. He's the only person that's actually like hurt him in some sense. And I was like, yeah, go Zuko, you did it. Like, you actually did something.
It's also so amazing because I think Zuko wanted to try it. Remember that cliffhanger where he's like actually on the cliff waiting for lightning?
Come and
like,
face me, so, you know?
Yeah. And he actually is able to go through that moment, use the skills he's learned, and without any like sweat. He's not sweating. He's not nervous. He's so sure of who he is and what he needs to do. And he's able to do the bending. So love that moment. Yeah. Some things that I like was smiling a little bit through the episode was the banter between Sokka and Toph and how how many times he compliments her and he's like, I'm so happy you're on the team. Like, what would we do without you?
I mean, and, they had 10 minutes of the eclipse and 10 minutes to find the bunker. And she's like, I found it. Like, I know exactly where it is. I know that there's a bunker. And also, what's crazy about the bunker is, you know, who else had a bunker who was a huge, huge, horrible Hitler. Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. I mean, it's the parallels right there.
Who knows? I'm sure a bunch of our favorite billionaires all around the world.
Have bunkers. I mean, why are we going to space? Because the Earth is burning. That's basically their other kind of bunker.
It's like, guys, can you please try to fix the world with your money rather than just go to space? Like,
and like, leave us all on here to die? Like,
yeah.
One of my favorite moments, though, is like when they're trying to get into the bunker, right? They're trying to find the Fire Lord and they see that random guy. And they're about to like attack him, and he's like, "This is above my pay grade. The Fire Lord is that way. You can't miss it." I thought that was so funny.
During those moments where they find the bunker, they find that random guy. You're like, "Okay, maybe luck is on their side." You know, like it's like, "Okay, maybe they're gonna do this. Maybe they're gonna defeat him."
Yeah, they found the guy that just doesn't care, and that scene reminded me. So my dad, I guess, like at some point in college, he was a security guard in Jersey City or something like that, and someone points a gun at his head. It's like, give me the passcode to steal all this stuff, and he's like, I'm getting paid minimum wage. You go ahead. Just go and do it. I ain't dying for this company right here.
No. Nope.
Reminded me of that.
Oh, also Azula, the other thing is like, I can't believe she had the Dai Li agents with her.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? But, it just like made me sweat. Like they were so prepared for this attack.
Yeah, because you know, she basically, we can all blame the Earth King for this. If it wasn't for the Earth King, this would be the series finale and we'd be done with. You know what I mean?
I know.
But we also have to think about Aang comes to a different realization because he's so ready to face the Fire Lord, but his tactics this time are going to be different than in the series finale. But yeah, the Earth King basically messed this all up. I thought it was really cruel that when Sokka was about to come and chase her, she had a knife, like she was going to slash him or something like that. I was like, that's like really, really bad. That's really cruel and disgusting, you know?
Yeah, wow. This whole family is just like
horrible. It's only Uncle Iroh and Zuko that are good.
I know. It's just like, wow, how did this go on for so long, right? But then it's like there's so much power within like the media and propaganda, and like it doesn't seem like most of the Fire Nation citizens are that happy either, like living under this regime.
Yeah, we look at other episodes where, you know, everything is destroyed by like pollution because of the soldiers and things like that, and they just don't know any better, which is unfortunate. And they're very secluded. They're not traveling to other nations to really see what's going on unless they're a soldier, right? So
I don't know. It seems pretty dark in general, but what did you think of the battle scenes?
Yeah, I was about to mention that. So I thought they were really great. I thought Toph was a boss. She's like MVP of this episode besides Zuko. Like in the gang, Toph is MVP. But I also was like, Aang keeps on trying to use airbending to defeat Azula. And I'm like, dude, like that is not air. Air is not how you're going to win a battle. No. You need to use, like, you have waterbending, you have earthbending, like maybe do some earthbending to like choke her, like to keep her down. You know what I mean?
What is he doing?
I don't know. I was like, come on. What did you think?
For me, it was just really sad to see. I think like the moment that really just crushed me was when they decide to surrender. And they had no other option, right? Like they needed to do it as it was like a strategic surrender. Like we understood that. But seeing them all say goodbye to each other at like,
so sad.
It really made me so sad. And just thinking like, oh, all these parents and adults that they were all so happy to be reunited. Like these families are back together and now they're in prison. And even like when I forgot who said this, but someone in the episode was like, oh, I'm used to being in a Fire Nation jail. Like, we'll be fine. Like, you guys go ahead. And we need the youth to step up and win this for us. But it's just like,
they
wow,
lost
they were
the battle. Yeah, but they don't that. But they need that hope to know that they can maybe win the war one day. So,
yeah, it was just very sad to seeing like the amount of prep that they did and then how they were just suddenly just overthrown with those parachutes. And then the mechanist, like the inventor guy was just like, how horrible must have that been for him to see the balloons, his creation, come through.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, technology can be great, but it can also be horrible. And I think the only reason why the Fire Nation is as successful as they are is because they have all this technology that other nations don't have. And mm-hmm. I think even just watching them, you know, with those air balloons drop down fire and it destroying everything, you're like, wow, fire, you have to be very careful with it. It destroys everything.
Yeah.
And the Fire Nation is destroying their land. They're destroying other nations. It's really sad. And it's just really sad that they, you know, the last episode ended like where they're retreating. We're going to win this. And then all of a sudden they lost.
Yeah. It was, I think it was a tough episode, but overall, like, as a doubleheader, the two of them together, they work really well. I think it's, like, it leaves you with the feeling of, like, we have been, at least for the most of season three, has been working towards this eclipse, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, we have the eclipse, we saw the battle, and now we're at a point of, like, what next? So I think it's just an interesting place to leave it, because right now the plot is so open for anything to happen, and before it was like
Zuko's involved somehow, right?
Zuko's involved trailing them, and it's just such an interesting place to end the mid-season. It's because everything that you've been working towards plot wise now has come to an end. The eclipse happened, they didn't beat them, like Zuko was like needed to define himself, and he did, and then now it's like what's gonna happen. So I kind of like that they left this there, and for a first-time watcher, it's like the story is limitless right now. Like, there's so many ways that the story can go. We obviously have seen it before as a rewatch, but even then you just see, like, what a genius moment. It's, you know, we're midway through the season, and it ends in such a way that it's like anything can happen. So I thought that was just smart writing.
I did, too. Even just like thinking about Aang, he's just so red, especially after a couple episodes ago where he's like, I can't believe I'm going to meet the Fire Lord and I have to defeat him. Like, he was so anxious about it. And now he's just so determined. He's like, I need to try to fight him. And this entire episode is very much like about decision making. Like, do you retreat? Mm-hmm. Do you face the thing that you need to face? And, you know, in the past, we've seen Aang kind of run away from things. And he's so much more ready to be like, I got to try to defeat the Fire Lord. Even after the eclipse, he's like, I'm still going to try to defeat him. And everyone's like, no. Like, on another day, not today. Like, let's take a step back. He's like, no, I'm ready. You know, I it's just heartbreaking because he knows how important it is. He can't let people down over and over again. And I know he's very sad right now.
it's great. I don't know. I think I would give it a 5. Like, it's hard not to just to see, like, the two of them together. Yeah. The two episodes together, like, the mirroring between Zuko and Aang, the battle scene, and the mirroring within the episode. Like, seeing Azula, seeing Ozai talk, like, I don't know. I think it's one of the best episodes, these two together, right? Yeah, this battle in general. Even on an animation level, it's great.
Yeah, seeing all the different technology and the battles, I would give it a 5 as well.
Yeah.
It was a really great episode. Very sad.
So fun, very sad. I'm so excited for the next half of the season. Like,
most of my favorite episodes are in the second half. So
I know.
I'm excited for the next couple.
What a mood change now. So I'm pumped. I'm pumped to like get to the next few episodes.
Same. Until next time, remember to like and subscribe.
Yes, we're almost done. See you next time. Bye.